Today's first reading is the call of Samuel to the work of the prophet. It's one of many call narratives in the Bible. Moses' burning bush in the land of Midian, Paul's blindness on the road to Damascus also come to mind. Samuel, remember, was the son of Hannah, who in her older age thought she was barren and prayed in the temple for the gift of a child. We might note that this holy place is not the temple of Jerusalem, which was not yet built or even imagined, rather a holy shrine in Shiloh, a place for the people's devotion, for their sacrifices and prayers, a place that housed the sacred ark of the Lord. Hannah prays in this place. Such was the intensity of her yearning. The old priest Eli thought that she was incoherently drunk. But when he understands her soulful yearning, he blesses her and sends her on her way. Well, not only was Samuel born to her, but ultimately, Hannah goes on to bear 5 more children, 3 sons and 2 daughters. In due time then, Samuel is born after Eli's blessing. And in gratitude and in keeping with the vow she made, she gives young Samuel, but a weaned toddler, to the service of God to be raised, one would assume, by the servants of the temple. And he was to become an altar boy, a servant of the priest, a minister of the holy place, and to attend to the lamp of God. We meet Samuel today as a boy, sleeping in the sanctuary where the ark of God was, while the old priest of Shiloh sleeps in his own room. Well, as usual, the small and homely details of the First Testament writers hook our attention. It is gloomy, but not dark, and the evening lamp has not yet run out of oil. Its flickering flame casts perhaps haunting shadows across the walls. 3 times, the child hears a voice calling, and each time runs to the priest he serves. 2 times, the old man tells Samuel that he did not call, but to go back to sleep. We are told that Samuel did not yet know the voice of the Lord. And in fact, in those days, visions and the word of the Lord were rare, very precious, and known to but a few. Well, you know how the story goes. The 3rd time, Eli is roused by the earnest and confused boy standing in front of him. And he finally understands something different and powerful is happening. And so he instructs Samuel, "Go lie down, and if he calls to you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place, likely wondering what in the name of God was going on, and wondering if that voice would call, as Eli suggests, maybe, yet again. The Lord came and stood there, calling as at the other times, "Samuel, Samuel." What I want to focus on today is the sense of awakening, Samuel's and ours. This passage, you see, informs our understanding of the rest of Samuel's life. The boy who meets the Lord of hosts at his bedside that night and likely experiences confusion, eagerness, affirmation, panic maybe, eventually becomes a faithful servant, a prophet, a military leader, an interceder for the people of Israel when they strayed. And rather ironically, toward the end of his own life, the corruption of his sons will mirror Eli's son's corruption. However, it's this encounter with the voice and the undescribed presence of the Lord that I think would propel Samuel for the rest of his prophetic and powerful ministry. In his times of doubt and persecution, I would bet that Samuel would look back to that one night when he was but a boy and remember the voice of the Lord to him. Samuel, Samuel. It was a night in his life like no other, and the changing power of that night and its impact would be significant for this prophet. Well, wouldn't your life be changed if the Lord appeared to you one night at your bedside and called your name? Most of us in fear would probably think the Lord is calling us home to heaven. I know I would. Surely Samuel would have been a changed boy the next day at breakfast. Our awakenings. Surely each person encounters the Lord differently. The Monday Night Contemplation prayer group just recently had a conversation about that very topic. For one person, it was the laying on of hands by the bishop at her confirmation that stirred her deeply and remains a touchstone of inspiration for her. For another, it was the stunning awesomeness of the night sky that spoke of God's power and presence, confirming for her the truth of the scriptures that she had known from young years. Both people described the power of that moment like it was yesterday. Actually, our group topic matter was the awakening of Brother Lawrence, a monk known for his simplicity and wisdom. Brother Lawrence was born in France in 1614, where he lived until his death in 1691. And at that time in France, in the social order, there was the very rich, the very elite, a middle class of sorts, and the poor. And the poor in his days were extremely poor. The hardship of poverty was Brother Lawrence's life. And as you can imagine, living a subsistence level of life, adding to the complexity of that was that this was in the period of the 30 Years' War, a complex war involving a number of countries in Europe, including France. And so it added to the crisis of the age and the trouble of Brother Lawrence's daily life to find food. Famine, you see, was a big issue in the 30 Years' War. At 18 years of age, in the midst of all this, he has a spiritual awakening that changed his whole life. It radically altered his experience of his day-to-day living. Not necessarily his social circumstances or his scrambling for food, but it altered him irrevocably. When he was 18 years old, you see, he was looking at a tree, of all things, a tree. And in the tree, according to the writings that came later after his death, you get the sense that while looking at the tree, he becomes more present to himself in his awareness, his oneness with the presence of the tree. It's a contemplative moment. And in his heightened awareness of himself and the presence of the tree, the presence of God shone forth and accessed his heart. And looking at a tree, there's this mystical awakening of the presence of God and the ordinariness of the tree. A surprising moment that remained for Brother Lawrence for the rest of his life. Well, his life moved forward and he joined the military, and I suspect, and he may have been conscripted, I don't know, but it perhaps was simply to receive a daily ration of food and do whatever he had to do to survive. He was severely wounded, and perhaps in our day he would have been diagnosed with PTSD. Such was the trauma he endured. Upon release from the military, probably due to his wounds, finally at the age of 28, he finds refuge in the order of the Carmelite order, and the monastic life. For him, the profound awakening that stayed with him for the rest of his life was that encounter with the tree that became to him God presencing God's self in and through the beauty of the tree, accessing his heart. I believe in my heart of hearts that many of our hearts are accessed through the beauty of the world around us. If I was to ask each of you, how do you know God's presence in the world? I bet most of us would say, when I look at the beauty of this world. As people of faith, our hearts are overtaken by this beauty and attribute that to the glory of God. One person of the Orthodox Church says, heaven and earth are full of God's glory. The world is a burning bush of divine energy, soaked in divine presence and grace. Such is the way we received creation from the Creator as a gift, and such is the way that creation was perceived by mystics as an image of God. So for the spiritual person, we see and hear things differently. The birds, the rocks, the butterflies, they all mean something to us, and our hearts become attuned to God through what we see and experience. Grace renders the spiritual person attentive, yearning to be one with all things. Our contemplation group is also discovering the awakening of St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross. For her, it was the little by little dawning awareness in the regular patterns of a religious life. And for him, it was especially through the trauma of brutal treatment of imprisonment, get this, by brother monks of the same order. God truly became for him a light shining in the prison darkness. What about you? And I presume all of us here today have some sort of awakened faith. You wouldn't be here today or listening online if not. Why otherwise waste your time? You wouldn't endure the challenges of Christian living if God hadn't somehow touched your life, accessing your heart, changing your heart day by day. Did your awakening happen like Brother Lawrence? You were surprised by something otherworldly, maybe even. Did the grace of God come upon you little by little like St. Teresa of Avila? Or perhaps it was the crucible of trauma that unraveled you so much that it could only be the strength of God that could be your refuge like John of the Cross. And of course, this is a small sample of how the Lord stands at the bedside of our lives, calling our name. And the Lord continues to stand at the bedside of our lives, calling our names. In the prompting, the nudging, the encouragements, the consolations of the Spirit. But I think key to our awakening of faith, whether it's that once and first time or in a series of awakening, dawning, deepening moments in your life, is the longing of God for you. A writer by the name of Ruth Barton writes, before you were even aware of your desire for God, God desired you. He created you with a desire for him that groans and yearns in the very fabric of your being. We love God because God loved us first. We desire God because God first desired us. We reach for God because he first reached for us and created us with a longing for himself. Right in the center of our desire for God is God's desire for us. When we feel our desire for God, we are actually responding to God. The truth is that our origin of our desire for God is God's desire for us. One other person goes deeper than that and says, the mystics would say that it is God who is even doing the longing in us and through us as the divine indwelling and Holy Spirit. God implanted a natural affinity and an allurement of God's self and all God's creatures. St. Paul says, doesn't he, something about we don't know how to pray, but the Spirit of God groans within us in words that we do not understand. That Spirit of God groaning within us, God longing within us for God's self. I'm going to suggest to you we may even experience this longing for union with God as a subtle feeling of homesickness. Have you ever felt something like that? A little subtle feeling of homesickness. One of the writers that our contemplation group studied last year suggests that God is our homeland. Listen to Brené Brown. You may know her name as the famed writer, podcaster, teacher. Spiritual homesickness has been a constant in my life. It was not an everyday experience, but a predictable and always reoccurring desperation to find a sense of sacredness within me. Not outside of me, my soul, my home, God in me. It was homesickness for a place that exists only within me. She writes, through my 30s and 40s, I would occasionally succumb to the yearning, drop everything, and run as fast as I can to visit the home within me. The door of my internal spiritual home would be one simple experience to encounter with a thin place. Maybe sitting in my car, she writes, listening to Loretta Lynn, sing How Great Thou Art. Or in an afternoon swim with God in Lake Travis. But then after that visit, I would leave and go back to my first half of life world. I describe this as this first half of life spirituality as the ebb and flow of homecoming and pain. Over the past 2 years, and she's writing this in 2024, over the past 2 years, I found that I'm more spiritually homesick than not. Spiritual homesickness has become an almost daily experience. It's not depression or exhaustion, she says. It's an uncomfortable feeling that I'm coming to the end of one thing and the beginning of the next. I'm leaving and arriving all at the same time. There's fear, but there's also joyful anticipation. Today, when I return home to the place in me where God dwells, I'm no longer interested in making a quick visit so I can run back to the world of what would other people think or what can I get done today? Today, I can barely be dragged out of that house. I'm drawn to different conversations and different connections. I want this sacred place to be my home, not somewhere I visit to buttress my real life on the outside of my connection with God. Well, you know, you can tell me at coffee whether her experience makes sense to you as you age. A deepening longing to remain in that internal space where our heart is at rest. An elusive homesickness that beckons you to remain in intimacy with God. In that inner space, which is akin to our personal Eden, we might think. For me, this is the lived experience of our union with God, a union of likeness where like calls to like, a union, though of difference, where God remains sovereign divinity, distinct, yet mysteriously united to his creation, to you, to the world around us. And it will be our attention to our spiritual practices that help us habituate ourselves to living in that inner awareness of God. Thanks be to God that God continues to awaken us, to visit us, to move within us, calling us deeper into union, inviting us to surrender to the love that surpasses all knowledge and understanding. Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.